assets are not always valued like they should. People's emotion comes into the picture, right? And that collective people emotion is nothing but the market direction. If everybody is feeling bullish, they're going to overpay. If everybody is afraid, they're going to undervalue assets.
Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings, the number one show about growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. Now, here's your host, Mark Allen Kenny.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings. I'm Mark Allen Kenny. Our guest today is Venkat Abbasarala. How are you doing today, Venkat?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Awesome. Thank you for being here. Venkat is a seasoned real estate professional. His main focus is ground-up development and acquiring value-add workforce housing. Venkat has developed over 500 units and acquired over 3,000 existing apartment units since 2016. He has also raised over $85 million from individual investors and manages assets valued at over $400 million. Venkat, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate you taking the time today. Could you tell the listener just a little bit more about your background and how you got started in real estate?
Absolutely. So I'm originally from India. So I immigrated to the US to pursue my master's in electrical engineering, University of Alabama, Huntsville. So after that, couldn't land a job in electrical engineering, so found a job in IT. And so pretty much was doing that. I was consulting, so basically worked in East Coast, West Coast, and finally found my way into Texas by taking up a project with Halliburton in Houston. And then PepsiCo is another project that I was working in back in 2006. That brought me to Dallas, and that is when I decided to actually buy a house and settle down here. And then got interested in real estate and start buying single-family homes from the recession, right? I mean, there's a lot of opportunities to buy foreclosures. So did 20 of those. And they were cash flowing well, especially compared to today's standards. They were cash flowing anywhere between 15, 20, 25% cash on cash, which we probably will never see again in our lifetimes. But yeah, they did very well, but just not enough to walk away from job. I was really, really craving for some financial freedom. I don't know why. I mean, as you grow older, your priorities change and you realize that we won't live forever. And you want to go travel, spend more time with family, things like that, right? I mean, so whatever that passion I had with my IT career, that started to wane off and craving for some work-life balance and financial independence and things like that. So in that pursuit, I was looking, okay, what else I can do in real estate space? Because kind of Fannie Mae cut me off after 20 loans. They said, no more loans for you. And I don't want to buy this razor thin margin deals. By 2015, there's not really big deals per se, even in single family, right? So then I started looking at multifamily, made some passive investments and started believing in those, understood how it works. And by 2016, started syndicating. My very first property was in 100 units property in Norman, Oklahoma, a college town there. And then started to buy apartments one after another. We were doing about 3 to 4 deals a year, not a whole lot, but accumulated about 3,000 units, 13 deals. Bought a property in Oklahoma, bought a property in Arizona, bought a property in Colorado. The rest of the properties are in Dallas proper, DFW proper. And then late 2019 is when I started to look at construction. And then several reasons, right? One of the thing is like the rapid appreciation in the existing B and C class property values, where I see much more better risk reward in construction than in existing multifamily. So that's when I started, you know, getting involved in some JV ventures with construction deals. I got about 500 units under construction and also a retail complex in Houston and seeking more JV opportunities in construction. So 50% of my concentration is on construction right now. And I still want to do B and C, but, you know, I changed my criteria a little bit, mostly markets. And I'm looking at the Western markets, Colorado's, Arizona's, Nevada's.
Sure, sure. Nice. So I want to skip back to what you were saying earlier. So can you walk us through that first syndication deal? So I understand, you know, you're doing a lot on your own. You bought a single family house. You understood, you know, hey, this is providing a little bit of cash flow here. I'm going to do this more. So you bought 20 houses, the max that you could do with those types of loans. And then the scale, we hear this story a lot. The scale isn't just quite what it needs to be, so people can start getting into multifamily. How did you make that leap and do that first deal? You know, did you have a mentor? How did you pull the trigger on that? And then also just this, the confidence of asset managing those, and it seems like you did multiple deals pretty quickly. So how did you kind of have the confidence to execute that?
Absolutely. So yes, I definitely had a mentor. Just didn't feel comfortable taking other people's money when I don't know what I was doing, right? I mean, so I actually paid money and worked with a mentor, and it's actually an investment room based in Dallas. So I learned my ropes over there. And more than learning directly from mentor, 90% of the learning happens by talking to the people in the group, right? Everybody's doing deals. So think of it as like a collective intelligence, right? People bringing pieces of nuggets of wisdom by them talking to other people, and then all the data comes in. And the more people you talk to, the different perspectives that you get. So I really feel that I learned more by talking to the people at the group, at the investment group, than actually with my mentor. Obviously, my mentor helped too. I'm not discounting anything, but the learning happens when you interface with a lot of people in the group. So that's how I learned. And then once you buy the one property, then again, the same thing. Whenever you run into a problem, you talk to for advice, right? To advice from the other owners who own in that market. It gets really easy when you have somebody to call to.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think there's that saying, you're the average of the five people you surround yourself with the most. So that makes a lot of sense. And then from there, I mean, on the partnership side, did you have a partner that you were working with to acquire these properties that first year?
Absolutely. So getting a partner is really important for several reasons, but two main reasons is it's highly unusual for one individual to have all the skill sets required to be successful, right? You need somebody who can complement your skills. You don't want to get people exactly like you, a partner exactly like you, because that is a recipe for disaster. I mean, constant tussle and all that. But I was lucky to find a partner who complement my skills and also accountability. The second reason is accountability. Let's say if I'm just pursuing my deals, you know, on a Friday evening, I want to actually take a scotch and just watch TV, right? But if you have a partner, we say, you know what, by Monday morning, I'm going to underwrite this, you're going to underwrite that. Let's exchange notes Monday morning. Well, guess what happens Monday morning when you don't show up? I mean, it feels, you feel kind of obligated, right? That you gotta pull your weight. So that really helped us. And both had IT jobs, very demanding IT jobs. And we were working like 16 hours a day, 8 hours for my day job and 8 hours in the evening. And didn't take my wife out for dinner or movie, nothing for 2.5 years. Ever since I started this thing, it took me 2.5 years to feel confident that I can walk away from job. And it was a good job, you know, base salary of $200,000 or about in Texas, right? I mean, in Dallas, it's good money. But in order to get the confidence to walk away with that kind of job, you need to have some properties under your belt, right? Producing some income for you. To get there, we work really crazy hours. We really work crazy hours. And without the partner, I doubt if I will be able to.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what do you personally find yourself gravitating towards in the business? I know a lot of, there's partners that are more analytical and they're analyzing the deal. They're keeping a close eye on the metrics and the KPIs and all that. And then usually their partners are more outgoing, doing investor relations, marketing, outreach, that sort of thing. What's your personality type and preferred kind of tasks for operating these properties?
Yeah, I like to be in control. Actually, so asset management is where I gravitate towards quite a bit. It's not a pleasureful job, if you will, because you'll come across a lot of situations and a lot of people will disappoint you, but you have to pick yourself up and just fix it and move on. So that's primarily what I was doing. And also, my partner was really good at investor relations, so that's what he focused mainly on. But I focus on broker relationships, right? I mean, I was able to convince a broker. Again, putting yourself in the shoes of a broker, right? They only want to know one thing. Will this guy retrade me after I put him under contract? And will this guy able to pull through and get a loan and an equity and basically close it?
Close, so yeah.
That'll make me good. And also I can earn my commission. That is all what broker is thinking about. So they won't ask you these kind of intrusive questions. Hey, where are you getting your equity from? Would you qualify for a loan? They don't ask you. So it's our job to communicate what we need to communicate to give them that warm and fuzzy about you. So that is something that I have focused on and had great success.
Yeah, I love that approach. I think we get deal flow just because brokers know that we'll close. So I think that's great advice. And you're right. No one wants to be rude and ask those questions. So communicating that up front and not even necessarily being direct, but just talking about your track record and your ability to raise money and close goes a long way. So I want to shift gears a little bit because you mentioned construction. And I'm super curious of, you know, how did that focus kind of change for you in 2019? And is it complementing the multifamily side or are you shifting gears there as far as your company strategy?
It's funny that you ask. So in 2018, we acquired quite many assets, right? So when we bought in Dallas, the very first property, we paid 50 a door. Then we paid 60 a door, 70 a door, 80 a door. And when we are paying from 50 to 80, constantly we find ourselves competing against some very big shops, right? Some really big shops. Suddenly after 80, they all disappeared, right? It became a lot more easier to buy these properties because this big fish, they're gone. It's like, and we went looking for them. What are they doing? How come I'm not seeing this shop competing like they always did? So what we learned is, me and my partner, we were keeping an eye on these sharks, right? The big fish, what they're doing. They moved out. It no longer made sense for them to buy B and C class properties at 90 a door, 100 a door, 110 a door. They moved out and doing one big company. Again, I don't want to name the names, but there was this very big company based out of Lubbock. They have their own friggin' jet, which they used to fly brokers here and there, right? I mean, they're a big deal, right?
Yeah.
They bought in East Fort Worth and all these rough areas at 20 a door, 30 a door, and they exited at 60 a door, 70 a door, 80 a door. They don't want to buy at 80 a door. They're done. So they moved to property management now, right? They want to be your property managers. And then there was this other company who quickly put together $2 billion and we bought a property from them also. So they left Dallas market completely. Here and there, maybe an odd deal here and there, but they were buying one huge property every other week, but they stopped. So we paid attention, right? So that is how our curiosity started. It's like they saw what's coming our way. Things are going to get a lot tighter is what they saw at least a year and a half before we saw, right? So that's one thing. And then, and again, just to summarize that, the reason why they're not buying is like these B and C class properties are a handful, right? So you need a lot more margin of error. Like COVID comes, bunch of people won't pay rent. You should still be okay. You cannot lose the property just because tenants don't pay rent for a couple of months, right? And then insurance goes through the roof, tax goes through the roof, you should still be okay. That's no longer possible after 80 a door, I would say, in the retrospect, I would say after 80 a door, 90 a door, tops 90 a door, at least in Dallas market, it's hard to make things work.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Just the details on that real quick for in Dallas. So if you're paying 70 or 80 K a door, what's the kind of average rent for that price point?
I would say about $900 to $1,000.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense.
And you still get the same rent, but right now you're paying $100 a door. That is the problem, right?
Right, right.
Your payroll goes up every year. Your taxes, insurance, all the expenses are going up, which you have zero control on any of these. But your income is not growing like they're supposed to. And we had fun, right? I mean, when we bought at 50, 60 a door, we just buy the property, do some basic asset management, no stress. The weekly calls with property management goes very smoothly. So even if the property management gives you a subpar service, you're still okay because the market is growing at that rate. We're getting 5-6% rent growth. It was good. But after 80, 90 a door, what we saw is like, you know, the rent growth kind of stabilized, right? It's not growing as much, but the expenses are. So that's the catalyst, right? I mean, we were wondering like what these guys are doing and why they're not buying these BNC class properties, especially in the primary markets. And this may not apply to all markets, but Texas is I think it's number three in the country when it comes to property taxes. It's pretty expensive from the property standpoint, but the overall tax load on a citizen is far less than most states in Texas because we don't have income tax, right? But unfortunately, our landlords, you know, we are actually holding the bag here. So where we have to pony up and pay all these property taxes. So that's when I moved on to construction, because that is what a lot of these big syndicators are doing, who used to be very active in BNC market. A good number of them, I would say over 50% of them moved to the construction to generate that $40,000, $50,000 markup, which we used to easily get in BNC.
Right, right. That makes sense. So how did you, I mean, those are two completely different business models. So how did you make that shift? And your track record is in buying existing assets in multifamily. So did you partner and connect with people that were already doing these types of projects, or teach yourself? And also, what is the strategy to go out there and acquire land, or what's the kind of the first step that you took?
So I have a much higher risk tolerance if I'm doing something with my own money. But my risk tolerance is a lot less the moment when I bring outside money in, right? If I'm syndicating a deal, if I'm bringing investors' money, my risk tolerance goes out the window, right? I got to be like really careful. So what I chose to do is to partner with some very seasoned developers with a shovel-ready project or near shovel-ready project. Right? So let's break this up. So why do we need experience? Hey, I don't know what I don't know, right? I mean, development, nothing is certain. Things change on a daily basis. I was actually pursuing a project here at right next to Galleria in Dallas. You have no idea. I mean, 2 months, we had like half a dozen plans. On one day, it's 200 units. The other day, it's 400 units. The other day, it's 350. It's changing due to the as we find things, right? I can talk for like a couple of hours just on that one, the kind of learning that we had. So what I'm saying is like, so when you go into something like that, you need a very experienced developer by your side, your partner, right? Not eBay. People pay like 3-4% to a developer and hire one. And you can do that. I'm not saying you can't, but it's a personal choice. I want that person to be invested into the deal. And better yet, why don't you go find the deal and let me vet it? Let me shoot holes through that. Let me put it through some kind of scrutiny from my lender side, my attorney side, and all that, and see if it stands to the test of the scrutiny. And if it does, let's do the deal. So basically, I look for a seasoned developer who has a shovel-ready or near shovel-ready project. And if you ask why shovel-ready, you don't want to get into a situation where you buy a piece of raw land and try to deal with city and have it zoned multifamily, because a lot of cities, they don't like multifamily because they're money losers for them. They get a lot of kids to educate. And in Texas, it takes $10,000 per kid to educate per year. Let's say if you build a 300 unit, even if you send 300 people, right, 300 kids, and some households have 2, 3, 4 kids, right? So that's still, right, $10,000 per kid times 300. But we pay them like, even at higher Texas property taxes, we pay them like $3,000 a unit in taxes. So they'll lose $7,000 per unit. When I say they, the city. So they don't like them. So I don't want to buy a piece of raw land or put a piece of raw land under contract and try to work with city, because you need a lot of influence and all that, which, you know, I'm not willing to do all that work. So that's why it has to be shovel ready, meaning it's already zoned. We have a good idea. I mean, the fit analysis already happened. We have a budget. We have a timeline. We know what we can get from loan standpoint, how much leverage we can get. All these things figured out before I bring my investors. The day one, my investors' money comes in, I need all these things figured out so that we can say, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. That makes sense. And I'm curious, on the deal flow for that, how is that compared to multifamily? Because I know you said you're doing 3-4 projects a year with multifamily. Are you able to find that deal flow with new construction?
Absolutely. Initially, it'll take a little while to get started. But once people know what you're doing, they'll just call me. And, you know, basically, I try to directly reach out to the developers. I don't try to directly deal with land brokers and all that. If they come, I'll talk to them. But as soon as I like a piece of land, I'll take it to my favorite developer that I want to work with, right? I'm looking for a partner here. I want that person to be part of the deal and vested into the deal so that, you know, he sees the project through. And another thing people don't understand is like leverage-wise. Lenders will not lend you the full leverage unless you have a broker inside your, not a broker, a developer, a seasoned developer with a good track record on your side. Even for a lending standpoint, it makes a difference.
Yeah, right? Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
They're covering their risks. So on the investor side, I know you've raised over $85 million from individual investors. How has that transition been? As far as you've built this great investor list who know you for multifamily, know you for apartment buildings, Has it been a challenge to communicate to them that, hey, this is a new construction project, there's the risk profile is different here, you know, and who, and has there been any struggle, or do people trust you in your judgment and your track record?
That's the later, basically the later. But I thought that it would be a hard sell. And my very first equity raise is on a 156-unit development in Princeton, Texas, right on Highway 380. So when I took the deal to them, I wasn't sure if they'll give me that money, right? But it was a lot easier than what I expected, right? So I was able to articulate why they should invest here. And especially, you know, for people who have solo 401ks, IRAs, and all that, for them, it doesn't matter, right? Actually, it's a lot less riskier to deal with a product, especially after post-COVID world, than with B and C, because the affordability is not there. They don't have money. I'm not saying about all of them, but a good number of them, they're struggling. We're still out 11 million jobs. And yeah, we're not out of the woods yet. So when I articulated this, what's going on in the country, or what's going on in our B and C class segments, and why we moved to class A, they understood our thought of our. And also, they had other investments, right? B and C, and they see what's happening there. And they couldn't put two and two together too. I mean, they're pretty smart. All our investors are very college educated professionals, IT people, doctors, lawyers, businessmen. So these are pretty savvy people, and they could relate to what I'm saying, and they themselves are learning on what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit. So as a passive investor, what advice would you have for, you know, where to invest in today's market in a post-COVID world? And, you know, you touched on it a little bit as far as being a little bit hesitant of B and C class properties. What advice would you give to someone who has, you know, has some capital, they need to put it to work? Where's the best investment for them today in today's market?
Instead of giving me telling people where to invest, I'm telling you, as a passive investor, I still do passive investments, right? I mean, it's not just I put all my money in my, I definitely put money in my deals, but I do passive investments too. And this is where I'm investing. In the last 2 months or so, I made like 4 investments, a couple of them in Colorado, a couple of them in Arizona. They're existing. And the reason I do that, and I'm looking to invest in some quality development projects also. It's not that I only invest in these, but I need some depreciation too. So sure. that's one of the reasons which keeps me still interested in B and C class apartments. But I find those markets much more stronger. Again, it's just my perspective, right? I mean, somebody else may have like the Eastern market. I like them too, but I don't want to spread too thin. I want to know everything I need to know about a few markets so that I can pick some quality deals and invest in those, right? Because again, it takes a lot of time to do the research. Right. And also, let's say if I research a market, doesn't mean that holds good for the rest of my life. I have to keep researching on what's going on, what's going good, what's going bad. So the reason I like these Western states is their proximity. They're very proximate to California, which is the most populous state in the country. Thanks to the politics in California, people are leaving by droves. And yes, I mean, Texas gets some of them, East Coast gets some of them, but mostly they're moving to the states that I just mentioned. And I have a very solid proof to prove my point. Like if you look at Las Vegas, they have like still some of the highest unemployment compared to any metro, right? Las Vegas, I think last I checked, at one point they were at 15%. And now I think they're at 8.6 or something like that. Still high. Like Dallas is maybe like 6 or 5, close to lower 6, right? However, the rent growth in Las Vegas is 5% in middle of all this. In which world does it make sense? So I started making calls to understand what is going on. I mean, I got to understand, right? I mean, a good investor always try to understand what's not very obvious. And what I found out is that people, especially social distance and all that, some people are just moving out of California, New York, and they want to be in Las Vegas. Several reasons. They like that lifestyle, that casino, I don't know. And some people just like the weather, the dry weather. And some people, and most important reason is the affordability. It's so cheap there. Everything's cheap there. And I think taxes-wise also, they're very good. So people are actually moving there, even though their job is elsewhere and they're telecommuting. You see what I'm saying? So these are the kind of things that we have to pay attention to in middle of all this thing on where to invest. And that's my pocket. That is where I want to invest in those Western states as when it comes to B and C class apartments.
I love that. Yeah. Just affordable major cities with population growth. That makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. And low expense load. Low expense load. And there should be some rent growth. There should be some rent growth. Here's what I learned after 3,000 units, right? We underwrite that we're gonna do the repairs and maintenance. We allocate some money, like $600 a door per year. And contracts, another $600 per door per year. Yeah, the older the property, that won't pan out. The CapEx will be much more than what you brought with you on the day of closing. Let's say I'm buying a 200-unit apartment complex. I brought $1 million to spend $5,000. What I saw was like, after I run through that million, there's still a lot of CapEx, right? I mean, it's a recurring CapEx. It's an older property, and that's the nature of them, right? So in order to finance that extra CapEx, your rent growth has to be very strong, north of 3%. Otherwise, you cannot stay in these B and C class deals much longer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's really, really hard, right? So either sell it or buy in markets where your expense load is not much. Expense load is another big problem, right? Because your taxes, insurance are going through the roof. I mean, you have zero control on that. Your income is not growing. What were to happen now? My NOI is going down every year. See, the cap rate compression, low interest rates is keeping all of us afloat across the country, right? Nobody's losing their shirt. But because of those reasons, right? Because of the infinite money supply, which is causing the cap rate compression and also the fiscal monetary policy that the Feds have taken, which is keeping the interest rates low. That's helping us for now. But on the long term, we got to be much more careful. Invest in the markets where there is migration of the people. And this should be evident, right? I mean, let's take, again, this is not me just taking a hit on Houston. Houston has a lot of population growth. Crazy. I mean, every time it's in the top three metros, almost always. But where is the rent growth? How come we're not seeing the rent growth if that many people are moving there? I don't know. The answer is I don't know. I have an idea, but I cannot claim that I know exactly why that is the case. But it's been a while since we saw any kind of rent growth, even before COVID, even before Harvey. After Harvey, there was some rent growth because there was a lot of flooding happened and several units got out of supply. But other than that, if you ignore that part, there's no rent growth there, right? We cannot go into those kind of areas. Again, if you want to be a little risk averse.
It's that time of the show for a segment called Best Deal, Worst Deal, where we talk about real estate transactions that you've done in the past so that others can learn from your knowledge and expertise. So Venkat, with that said, what's the best real estate deal that you've done?
So I would say that it's my deal in Glendale, Arizona. It was our number two deal. The second deal that we bought, it was an off-market. Now Phoenix is red hot, right? Figuratively and literally, right?
Yeah.
So back then, not so much. This was in October of 2016. So it was a 120-unit, single-story apartment complex that we bought in Glendale, Arizona. Everything worked. Like, for example, we put a 7-year debt, which allowed us to get after the deal quickly without paying a lot of prepayment. Every other deal, we put 12-year debt. I don't know why we put 7-year, but that was the right choice. And then when we bought the property, every single month, the collections keep going up. No problems. And we found an excellent management company there. A small company, very small company. And everything worked like clockwork. We never missed a distribution. Everything went exactly like it's supposed to, and then some, right? On that particular property, I think we did more than 100% in about 24 months for investors, right? More than that. So yeah, I would say that's my favorite deal.
That's amazing. Do you have any advice on, how to recreate that? Would you attribute that to luck or how did you know the deal would go that well?
See, there is a luck component, right? In anything and everything. But luck favors for those who prepared in the sense like take correct advice, right? See, again, I cannot go and buy in the worst market, overpay, and hope that I'll get lucky. Well, why don't we get lucky, right? I mean, because you just made too many mistakes for luck to be able to save you, right?
Sure.
We got to educate ourselves, take advice, take different perspectives and all that, and work with right people, set right expectations. When you do a series of things the way you're supposed to do, you'll get lucky. really, you'll get lucky, right? But luck can help you at that point, right? So I would say that there is a good amount of luck, but mostly I would say it's the market. It's the market. Even in stocks, right? I mean, on a down day, you buy Tesla, even Tesla, it goes down, right? It might defy logic now and then, but for the most part, that is true, right? Whatever you buy will go down on a down day. But on an upswing market, you buy the dog, it still goes up. So what I'm trying to say is like, assets are not always valued like they should. People's emotion comes into the picture, right? And that collective people emotion is nothing but the market direction. If everybody is feeling bullish, they're going to overpay. If everybody is afraid, they're going to undervalue assets. So I would say that the market, that right timing, right asset, yeah, that definitely, luck definitely had a role to play.
Got it. And what would you say is the worst deal that you've done?
So here's the thing. My very first deal, 100 units in Norman, Oklahoma. If you say that, if I go back in time, if I do that again, it's my worst deal, but I would do that again. I learned a lot. That's my very first deal. This is what happened, right? So people are doing extremely well in Texas. Nobody would give us a 60-unit deal in Texas. Me and my partner, we both live in Dallas, but nobody were giving even a 60-unit. And the brokers are extremely nice people, right? So they won't let you know that you don't have a shot. But you don't have a shot, right? Yeah. So our LOI goes all the way to the stack. Again, they're not trying to be mean to you or anything like that. They just don't know what you can and cannot do. That's all. Mm-hmm. They cannot be very intrusive, like we talk about it, right? So they cannot be very intrusive. So what they do is they don't want to pull the trigger on something that they don't know already. So it was a big challenge. Well, then my partner is the one who suggested, look, we can keep doing this for next 2 years and may or may not be, we'll land something here. Let's get out of the markets, some other market outside Dallas, which is not as hot as Dallas back then in 2016, mid-2016. And we found that, okay, Oklahoma is drivable. We'll just go there. And we find ourselves this 100-unit project. But then again, at that time, we didn't have CoStar. We didn't have that frame of mind, a complete understanding like we do now. See, again, you don't know what you don't know. So we went into this market thinking that, hey, when the rest of the country is struggling in 2011, 12, 13, and all that, Oklahoma was doing really well, thanks to oil. If you remember, oil was on the tear, $120, $140 a barrel. All the oil places were doing very well. We went into that market and oil tanked, and you should see, it was bloodbath, right? I find myself, I'm a class C 1963 property, 100-unit property, right, in Norman College Town. But I find myself competing against class A properties built in 2009 and so. My rent and lease rent is same, right? So what's happening is like, because of that weakness in the market, mostly oil driven, there's a lot of unemployment, people moving away, that kind of thing at the time. And mostly because of oil. Again, I have to insist that it is, no doubt about it. So then what happened is this class A, in order to stay in business, they lowered their rent so much that they are now competing with me, a Class C property, and they're cherry picking all the good tenants. I'm getting all the rejects, right? Rejects in the sense, like, again, I'm not trying to be like a submissive of these people, but they come here, take the offer, $99 move-in or something like that, and then maybe they'll pay one more rent, the second month rent, and then they don't pay rent. So it's like a revolving door. I'm bringing people in, I'm moving people out. And remember, this is my first deal. So the reason I said that if I can go back, I'll do it again, is this. Had I bought my first property in Dallas, I would have thought that it's easy, right? Anybody can do it. You come in, you buy it, boom, 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 everything is okay. Like my Glendale, Arizona property, right? But seeing the worst of the worst, right? It's constant stress. That's the first time I ever raised money ever in my life. And it was stress. It's so much stress on me. But we were able to sell that property in 2 years and we paid 17 IRR. So that's the worst deal, right? So we got out okay. But we swore that I will never drive past the Red River, which is the border from Texas to Oklahoma. I will never drive past that again. So that I would say that's my worst deal, but I learned a lot.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. Venkat, we're getting pretty short on time here, but where can others go to connect with you and maybe even invest with you?
Absolutely. People who want to talk to me can reach out via email at Venkat, V-E-N-K-A-T, at ravenmultifamily.com. Raven like the bird, multifamily.com. Or they can call me at 281-727-9238.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. It was a pleasure chatting with you, and have a great rest of your day.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Allen Kenny. If you're interested in apartment building investments, schedule a call with me so we can have a chance to chat. My company is focused on growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. So let's hop on a quick call and talk about your investment goals and see if we're a good fit. Find out more at stellarinvestmentgroup.com.